And we welcome Matthew Paris. Thanks very much for your time, Matthew. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Now, a new leader of the Scottish National Party. This has been an extraordinary turn of events in recent months, hasn't it? But tell us about the new First Minister, please.
Yeah, his name is Hamza, and he is of South Asian origin. He has been important in government in Scotland for quite a while, as a member of the Scottish Assembly, the Scottish Parliament, and as a member of the government. He hasn't really had a very successful track record. All kinds of things have gone wrong, including with building of ferries and all the rest. But there was a tense standoff between him and his nearest challenger, Kate Forbes. They were both pretty unpleasant about each other for quite some time. She has been the Scottish equivalent of Chancellor of the Exchequer, and he only just beat her. And the general feeling is that he inherits, indeed whoever becomes leader of the SNP, inherits a party in a state of something not far from collapse. We now realise that Nicola Sturgeon's personality and her grip were really what was holding it all together, and that they all seem to be at each other's throats. He has started insulting her. She's been insulting him. He then offered her a much lower post. She would have wanted to carry on, I think, being in charge of the finances. She told him where to put his offer in no uncertain terms. So he's got off to a really bad start. She had Kate Forbes, this is, had a very difficult time in the hustings for the leadership when she said that she would not have voted for gay marriage. She's a member of the Presbyterian Church in Scotland. She feels quite strongly about it. She says she doesn't want to stop anyone else from doing whatever they want, but that she would not have been able to vote for it. And there was really no let up in the opposition that she suffered after that. Otherwise, I think she would have won.
It's really interesting, isn't it? Because Nicola Sturgeon was such a potent figure in UK politics. There were probably, yes, a few who thought she should have been running the whole show. And very influential also in global politics. She was an extraordinary figure. Could you explain a little bit more, I guess, about the party itself and, its components and, as you say, perhaps the various factions that she has held together so astutely?
Well, this is both the problem and the cement that has held the party together, and that is it has been a party that whose main reason for existence is to campaign for an independent Scotland. And that has held them together. It has tended to paper over all kinds of cracks in ideology. There's some quite right-wing people in the party. There are some quite left-wing people in the party. But the one thing that has held them all together is Scotland must be independent. And Nicola Sturgeon, who's a strong character, I actually remember going to a Glasgow constituency when she was campaigning in a general election. For a seat. It was one that she couldn't hope to win. But I went there as a sketch writer, and I was so impressed with this young woman. She was only in her late 20s. Then I could see this was someone who was going to go somewhere. So with her iron grip and with her constant emphasis on independence for Scotland, she's kept the whole show on the road. But things started to go a bit wrong on independence for Scotland when she was, as it were, overruled by the Supreme Court on an issue of there have been two, but the most recent one is that they wanted to put a 20 pence deposit, as it were, on all glass packaging or glass bottles and jars and things like that. It was very unpopular in Scotland, and it has been discovered that it's against English or United Kingdom law as well, because it would have affected all kinds of manufacturing processes.
What does this mean also for things like the independence campaign, etc.? Again, Nicola Sturgeon, just such a strong figure. Does this sort of spell a death now for its prospects?
She lost on that one too, because she wanted to have a Scottish referendum on independence without permission of the United Kingdom. And the Supreme Court ruled that she couldn't do that. So she had actually more or less reached the end of the road on independence. There wasn't anything more she could do than keep calling for it. And that the support for independence has been not plummeting, but it has been slowly slipping, and it is now less than 50%. So the SNP were already in a difficult position and now robbed of the kind of smack of command that she was able to give. Nobody knows what's going to happen. It's very good for the Labour Party.
Now, what is happening with Jeremy Corbyn, expelled from Labour, but is going to fight on in his seat as an independent?
He is. He's become a sort of demon figure now in British politics, blamed by the Labour Party for losing the 2019 election. And in a sense, Keir Starmer, the leader of the Labour Party, has majored on attacking Corbyn and attacking on Corbynites and stopping left-wingers from being selected as candidates. So in a sense, Keir Starmer has been defining himself against Jeremy Corbyn. And the latest is that the Labour Party have said that Jeremy Corbyn may not stand for Islington North, his constituency, as a Labour candidate. And a day or so ago, Corbyn said that in that case he'll stand as an independent. That could rob the Labour Party of victory in the constituency, and it's obviously going to cause quite a stink.
And also today, happening in the UK, Rishi Sunak is facing an attack from the Tory right. What is this over?
It's over the Northern Ireland Protocol. That's one of the things that it's over. He's being attacked. Well, the right are always attacking. They about 22 of them voted against the protocol the other day. And now I'm just racking my brains for the latest thing that they're attacking him on. It's for not threatening to take the UK out of the European Convention on Human Rights. The Labour Party, the Conservative Party, Sunak has very much put himself at the head of all this, are planning, as our listeners will know, some a pretty tough new legislation which will result in anyone who arrives by boat, the illegal boat migrants, hardly being able to set foot in this country without being quickly whisked off to Rwanda. That's causing quite a fuss. There is an argument that this is against the Geneva Convention on Human Rights on refugees and against the European Convention on Human Rights. The right of the Conservative Party want him to threaten, and they want the legislation to threaten that we British leave the Convention on Human Rights if they won't let us do this. He is unwilling to do that. He believes that the European Court of Human Rights can be persuaded of that what we want to do is not against the convention, and he wants to maintain decent relations with the European Union and with the court as long as he can. Quite a bit of the right of the Conservative Party are really just spoiling for a fight with the European Union, and they want this to be the casus belli.
I don't know if you've seen a report just out. Amsterdam has told young British men who want a messy weekend to stay away. There will be ads triggered if people search online for terms such as Stag Party Amsterdam. Goodness, it's actually a geo-targeted campaign. This is interesting.
Yeah, this has been going on, of course, for a long time. I'm sure that a lot of our listeners will know that people on the continent, not just British people, but particularly British people, have often gone to Amsterdam in the old days because of the red light district, and then much more recently because marijuana was available almost everywhere. Though I've been into a marijuana cafe for a report that I was making, smoked absolutely openly. You can buy it anywhere, and harder drugs too are easier to get in Amsterdam, and it's got this kind of sin city reputation in Britain, and now lots of young men in particular have adopted it as a place they want to go for stag parties. European city after European city is throwing us out because Barcelona was often the target for these sorts of stag parties. And the mayor of Barcelona has said the British are no longer welcome there. Now Amsterdam is saying that the British are no longer welcome in Amsterdam. I mean, we had it coming. It's I don't think it's acceptable for parties of slightly drunken young men to go staggering through the street in a foreign capital, smoking marijuana and just generally making mayhem.
Yes, interesting move, though, by a city to actually campaign people to stay away.
Yes.
Will banning laughing gas help? What on earth is this story about?
Well, I don't know if this has hit New Zealand yet, but if you live, as I do, in East London, you over to the Docklands Light Railway, and littering the ground, literally littering the ground, are hundreds of little silver canisters, which I understand will have contained nitrous oxide. And apparently you apply this canister to a balloon, blow the balloon up, as it were, from the canister with a nitrous oxide, then inhale from the balloon. And it isn't particularly, it's called laughing gas, but it gives apparently a feeling of great relaxation and general good humour. There is an argument that if you become addicted to the stuff, though it's not an addictive drug, it can be bad for your health. But somebody remarked, a scientist only the other day, that only two known deaths from this in as many years. But people don't like seeing these canisters lying around. They don't like seeing the remains of balloons lying around. And they don't like seeing youths. It's almost entirely youths just standing around in corners, blowing up balloons and inhaling the stuff. And Michael Gove, the Levelling Up Secretary, has announced that the government's going to try to ban the use of nitrous oxide. The problem is that as drugs go, it doesn't cause nearly as much harm as, for instance, alcohol does, probably doesn't cause as much harm as marijuana does. And putting it on the prescribed list is probably likely only either to drive it underground or to drive people onto different kinds of drugs. For a long time in Britain now, every time there's a bit of a craze sweeps through the younger generation, the government tries to ban that particular chemical composition. And then, of course, another chemical composition, another gas comes up. And the general feeling is that this is virtue signalling by the government, but it isn't really going to make very much of a difference.
Gosh, the party police are well and truly out, aren't they, today?
Yeah, yes, they are. Yeah.
The main offence is the plastic glittering, I'd imagine.
It doesn't look particularly nice, but I think it's because it's associated with drug use that the sight of this stuff really does offend an awful lot of people. I would say, too, looking at the areas and looking at some of the groups that you see, that it's mostly lower income younger people. This is not a party drug for upper middle class youngsters. It's not a party drug in the West End of London. It's in the East End of London with big immigrant populations, which is, a lot of young people don't have a lot to do, and this is all they have to do, and now they're trying to stop them do that.
Thank you so much. That is Matthew Paris, our UK correspondent.